really just to make sure my head is in the square of the frame.
Just click the go live button because we appear to be live.
Are we? Oh dear. Well, that's normal. it's fine. I mean, you know that Brain Food Live is a super unprofessional and unproduced show, so it's good.
It's authentic.
It's authentic. Yeah, we sell it that way. You know, transparency is a value these days that we live by, but we get away with it by saying it. It's kind of a way to cover up our lack of professionalism. Anyway, we're live, everybody. Actually, we're not. We're a bit a minute early, so we've still got a bit more chit-chat to go. No, we are live now, actually. 12 o'clock on the dot. So welcome, everybody, to Brain Food Live on Air. It's episode 80. Episode 80. Can you believe?
Wow, that's a big number.
We have done. We're gonna hit this. We're gonna make 100 in very short order, which is fantastic. I would have never thought.
Yeah. Pandemic permitting, of course.
Well, the thing is, Brain Food Live is pandemic proof. So basically, it seems that especially when we go to a dual host, we've always got one man standing, so to speak. So we're all good. So anyway, welcome everybody. We've got an amazing show for you today. It's actually going to be like a meta show because we're talking about live streaming and video and why everyone needs to get better at it, because this is the new normal in terms of how we communicate with our candidates and clients. We cannot get away with just telephone call and email anymore. We have to upgrade our ability to talk on screen and on air. Anyway, before we kick off, a quick sound check as usual. We are multicasting everyone, so I think everyone can hear me on Crowdcast. If you can, just please say hello on the chat stream there. We're out over there on LinkedIn Live. Hopefully, I had to reconnect my LinkedIn Live today, so I'm not sure if that's working at all. But if it is and you can hear me, just give me a quick hello or a quick thumbs up on LinkedIn Live. That would be amazing. That way I can see that you're there. And we're also multicasting, I believe, on Facebook, in the Facebook group. And if you're there, you can hear us. Please say hello. Okay, great. We're getting a few hellos back. That's fantastic. It seems that we're okay. Quick word for our sponsors this week. Our sponsors this week are our great buddies, Video My Job. They are an amazing product that help teams create employer branding videos. I think they're one of the first businesses to really crack the idea of, hey, you can easily create branded videos without having a lot of design support or creative department or whatever. You just need a phone and you need the app and you can do it. So Video My Job are an amazing business. They're based out in Australia, but actually international organization, of course. There you go, Video My Job, bit of promo. But they're a really cool company. The guy who actually founded them, I actually worked with at one point. And I didn't find this out until I met him a couple of years ago. It's rather incredible. But anyway, I've just shared the link to Video My Job there. Check them out. If you want to book a demo, you can do so for free. I will also share the link in the chat stream there. Okay, great. Anyway, let's get on with the show. I'm very excited today because we have a great show. But not only so, we've also got another upgrade. Adam Gordon, he's been on a couple of weeks. And you know what? We can't have that. We can't overdo on the Adam Gordon, can we? So we've upgraded with Stephen O'Donnell. Stephen,
so you always,
very good
you always have to have a Scotsman of some sort.
It's a bonus. I don't think it's necessary. Great to have a Scot on board. So Stephen, great to see you, man. For the people who don't know you, by the way, can you quickly just introduce yourself, who you are and what it is you do?
You might see a number of trophies behind my head here and the thing on screen right here. So I run the National Online Recruitment Awards, and I've been in recruitment since 1987. I was 12, I think, when I started. And most of that time, well, initially recruitment agencies, then recruitment tech, online recruitment. And for the past 20 years, as you can see here, I've been running the National Online Recruitment Awards. And in the past few years, working with a number of startups in recruitment. One of them, of course, Video My Job. Love the technology. So last year, for the whole of last year, I was working with Video My Job, and their product is absolutely stellar. Particularly in these times when we're relying on video tech to communicate with candidates, to communicate with vacancies, to do the employer branding, then yeah. So startups like that I've been working with in the past few years, Pocket Recruiter, a number of other companies as well.
Yeah, cool companies and all like friends of Brain Food as well, which is great, which is why yeah. sort of there's a multiple connection points between you and I. By the way, if you want to know more about Stephen, he wrote an amazing 20 questions in the Brain Food Tribune, which I've just shared with you on the chat stream there. That's an amazing Thank story. You. I really do appreciate that. Anyway, Stephen, you've got a job to do, which is basically, you know, reading the newsletter and telling me what you found interesting, man. Did you read a newsletter and what did you find interesting?
I absolutely read the newsletter. So I'm one of these people who will cherry pick, so every Sunday morning I'll get the message through, same as everyone else, and I do tend to cherry pick the ones that jump out for me, and the ones that not so much I might either leave or leave till late in the week. The ones that jumped out at me this week in terms of relevance to what's going on right now. First of all, the one I put to one side, and I shouldn't do, but is women in the workplace, because to an extent, you know, what am I doing talking about women in the workplace? But it's an absolutely essential area where everyone should be reading up in this stuff, reading up on areas that are out with your sphere of influence or sphere of direct that it's going to affect you. But the ones that particularly stood out for me, there was Kay Scorer. Getting some work done, where she's essentially telling the story about dealing with a recruiter who...
Oh, wow, yeah, this is an amazing one.
Well, yeah, she was talking about a recruiter essentially saying, look, you need to work on yourself. Now, it chimed with me because in my earliest days as a recruiter, quite often, and I'd be dealing with usually salespeople with, you know, they come in with the suit on and the white socks, and we would often tell them to, you know, get to John Lewis's and change what they're wearing because we're going to send them directly to an interview. And in those days, we'd no qualms about you know, looking someone up and down, assessing them, and saying that's not good enough for the client we're sending you to. They'll expect jacket and tie, no white socks. No trainers, you're going for a professional job, and the candidates, for the most part, would they'd be open to that. Okay, so what do I need to do? And sometimes we would have spare ties in the drawer to give people to wear to interviews. So, but when you come around,
a quick one here, Stephen. I mean, basically, I'll be addressing the crowd here. A bunch of recruiters watching this. I'd be very interested to know whether you have ever given anybody like advice on appearance during interview. I'd love to hear you say whether you have and what context that was, because I've done this as well. I think similar eras to you, Stephen, you know, it was actually part of the training. It was like, look, you're there to try and present this person. This person is inappropriately dressed in your judgment. You give that person advice. But I think these days, is that still okay to do? And it's like, big question, you know?
Well, obviously the standards of what, an employer might accept someone coming along for an interview, you know, dressed as or looking like, are quite different to what they were then. Those days, you would expect someone in a suit and tie. You would expect someone who, you know, if it was women, they were wearing particular shoes or skirts and tights and so on. And these days, not at all. But these days, I think people are more expected to turn up with the right attitude than, you know, what they're wearing. But also, You know that bias is in everyone's mind. So when someone sees you, if someone saw you wearing a football top of a particular team that wasn't their team, then they might take against you. That's an exaggerated form of it. But if you turn up dressed in a particular way, if you're wearing a tracksuit or a hoodie or a whatever, if you went for an interview with Google and you had a hoodie that had Microsoft on it, they might.
Yeah,
one or two things about it. So use your common sense and you know, don't push it. But I would always say go along to an interview the best form of yourself that you can be, that you're still comfortable being.
Yeah, on that note, I think recruiters do have a kind of a candidate care position. You want the candidate to succeed. After all, you're sending them forward. Your interests are aligned. But in this case, it was really interesting because it may be taking it too far. So this lady, Kay Scorer, she apparently, according to her, the recruiter actually recommended her to get some plastic surgery. And it was like, what? And obviously she was outraged by this. And she's an older lady. I think there's a bit of ageism involved here, a bit of sexism involved here. Yeah. I think a bit of like culturalism, maybe. I don't think you could ever have that conversation in the UK. It was in the US, I think. And, you know, maybe different cultures and different scenarios are a little bit more okay with the idea of you need a nip and tuck here and there. But here, I was astonished to read that story, and I thought, wow, like, is that not okay?
Well, think of it this way. So I'm clearly a mature gentleman, and, you know, I don't have as much hair as I used to, and I've got the odd wrinkle where it used to be baby soft. But I wouldn't get criticised in the same way as a woman of the same age as me. If a woman turned up and hadn't covered up her grey, hadn't put a bit of makeup on, and even now, then they would be held to a standard that I'm not being held to. I can walk about with a silvery beard, and people might say, "Oh, that's quite dashing." But if a woman had silver hair, then she's quite clearly not interested in the job because she's not looking after her appearance and blah blah blah. Now these are all wrong because they're nothing to do with ability to do the job, but. And all interviews are a two-way process where the candidate is interviewing the company as much as the company is interviewing the candidate. So in that scenario, if I went along for an interview for a job and they were clearly judging me on my appearance, then I would turn the tables. I would say, well, let's just go through how you've turned up today.
The thing is, Stephen, they would never, I don't think people would... This is at the unconscious bias level.
They maybe wouldn't say it out loud.
You wouldn't say it out loud. But you made a very interesting point about the gendered version of this. And I think it's absolutely right. Yeah. Men and women have very different kind of challenges in this scenario. And I'd be very interested to hear, actually, what is the pressure for women in particular when they're going to interview, for instance? What is the expected standard of appearance? Yeah. Whereas... do guys get away with more slovenly appearance, maybe? I think probably, yeah.
One of the key things to remember is do you want to get a job by presenting a fake version of yourself? So if you're turning up in, you know, a suit and tie and all of the things that you would never normally do and get the job on that basis, do you then have to then carry out the job on that basis so you're then a fake version of yourself to do the job? Or do you want to get the job for all the right reasons?
Well, I mean, these days people just want the job, though. I mean, let's face it. We're in a sort of, I wouldn't say desperate scenario, but it's clearly, you know, not one of these where you can pick and choose anymore. So I think people are going to amend their appearance and behavior or whatever. Yeah. And in fact, this is the example with Kay. You know, the recruiter probably well-meaning, I would imagine. Like, there's no reason why they would say that in a negative way. She's probably trying to help. But... it was like saying, "Hey, you got to deal
If the recruiter thinks it's acceptable to suggest Botox or nips and tucks, then it may. Well, that tells me more about the recruiter than anything else. That they think these are on a par with changing your clothes. Having some sort of medical intervention to make yourself look the way that people think you should is ridiculous."
This is where I think there is a cultural divide. I mean, as I say, we're in the UK. It's like outrageous to even hear that spoken. Yeah. But I'm just, again, maybe layering on some anti-US prejudice here. But I just wonder whether if you have a culture that is routinely using Botox, maybe it become more acceptable. Anyway, moving on quickly.
The future remote. There's an article at GitLab talking about the future of remote working and the different ways in which different companies are approaching this. There are lots of companies. Let's face it, in the GitHub sphere, who have always been or largely been populated by remote staff, and companies coming to it for the first time. Are waking up to, well, how do we engender a culture that is genuinely us, but is also catering for the needs or the wants of our staff, so that they feel part of the organisation, so that they feel that they are teammates with someone else on the other side of the world, and ways in which they can make people feel that they belong. So the different ways that looking at doing that is always fascinating to me. I do think that it's going to be a continually moving ball here, where we haven't settled on what remote work means yet. And maybe we never will.
It's going to be really interesting on this because I've just shared the link to on the chat stream there. People should definitely check out this post. I thought it was a really good case study on how, firstly, it's brilliantly written. It was like this interactive storytelling type of style. It fantastic. Yeah, looks fantastic, really easy to consume, really a modern way of telling a story. I think if anybody who's a content person should really check this out, obviously put a lot of work in there to get this post out. GitLab are turning into the poster child on what radical remote, I call it, you know, companies that are super committed to this concept and have basically built their entire idea around we're never going to have an office and everything builds from there. So check that post out.
One of the key things in the article, it's talking about places in Ukraine and Europe and the Netherlands and so on. And these are often in the UK. These are locations for people to be based that we're not thinking about on a daily basis. But clearly, in whatever job you're in right now, that you've not been in the office for the past 6 months, you could have been on a beach in Madagascar. You could have been, halfway up Mount Everest doing the job.
Let me say this, Stephen. As the winter cold in Northern Europe starts to bite, I think the idea of being somewhere else is starting to become very, very real for people. And that will certainly happen. I think as a kind of a second order effect of this is that that question will be raised, and then companies will start pushing those jobs out. And then there's a big question to say, right, what do we do for the remote advocates are going to end up basically offshoring their jobs, you know?
So there's a really important aspect to this, which has been topical in the past few weeks, and it ties in with one of the other articles about salary transparency. And it's to do with people in Silicon Valley moving out to be elsewhere. And when they're in Silicon Valley and we're in that particular area, and it's the same thing happens in London, there's often a premium on the salary to attract and to maintain people so that they can afford to live there, frankly. But if the job is then, someone's living in the Highlands of Scotland where they can buy a castle for the same price that they would buy, a single room in London, then can the employer get away with paying less? Or is the job valued in the same way? People are now packing their bags and leaving, really expensive places to live and going off elsewhere. Well, they've got the salary from the high end places, and they're taking it to a low cost place to live.
Interested to know what the crowd thinks on that. Should companies pay according to the cost of living based on the location of the person, or is the price of the job the price of the job? That is a controversial type of decision. I think I only know one company that has paid basically flat rate regardless. This is Basecamp. And they say, look, this costs this much. Doesn't matter if you're in San Francisco or if you're in Detroit or if you're in sort of Asuncion in Paraguay, whatever. Doesn't matter. This is the money. However, how untenable is that? Because you're going to end up paying like times 100 to a local person that may actually end up having a disproportionately large salary according to their local.
So you could say, should they ever have paid a premium for people to live locally? And the corollary of it is, if a company is in London and they're paying London salaries to attract people who can afford to live in London, but they would like to pay less, then the company shouldn't be in London. I've always been of the view that taking a commuting point of view, because people often commute into London an hour, 2 hours to get to work, and then the same going home. If you're more than half an hour away from where you work, then you either work in the wrong place or you live in the wrong place. So move. And the same thing goes for employers. If you can't find the staff for the salaries that you can afford to pay where you are, then move your company somewhere else. And obviously we've seen that in manufacturing. Often companies will go from the UK to Eastern Europe to then to the Far East, and they'll go wherever they can afford to be in business.
Well, yeah, I mean, staffing is one of the major challenges for anybody setting up a business. But hopefully with remote working, maybe that unlocks the global marketplace in a genuine way. The challenge you might have is job flight. I mean, I think governments will have a problem with it, obviously. This is part of the reason why we have this, propaganda that you need to go back to the office and all this type of stuff that's going on. primarily, yeah. I think governments are starting to clock that, you know what, remote working is going to mean job flight. And that means tax revenue, that means economy going down, et cetera, et cetera. So it's going to be a grand level. We're talking about leveling up on a country basis, but it should be leveling up on a global basis. And here's where we have to confront our own sense of social justice and equity. Like, are we prepared to accept a global leveling up? Because that's what remote working is going to logically end up at. Okay, one more, Stephen.
Come Brexit, then job flight is going to be a lot more difficult.
Yeah, well,
in Europe anyway.
Not if it's remote, though. You can just hop, skip, and jump right over that. But anyway, let's move on quickly. One more, mate.
Okay. One more. So I mentioned a wee bit on it before. Internal mobility and salary transparency. Internal mobility was the article. I'm just clicking to get the... Yeah, so it's Schneider Electric tactics that they're using to step up on internal mobility. And I do think that, that salary transparency comes into it as well, because when you're looking at ways in which you can move people through an organisation, where you can identify people who are in one part of a company that could evolve to work in another part, then salary transparency, I think, is one of the things that is the barrier, is a barrier to doing that. And right now, companies are redesigning roles, entire roles, entire departments, based on where someone is going to be physically based to do the job. So they might put together the roles in different ways, different functions within whatever they call the job of, say, design engineer or salesperson or marketing executive. They'll repurpose or redesign what the duties are in each of the jobs. So you will be finding a lot of people getting retrained to move to different parts of an organisation where they don't want to lose the skills of the people that have been with the company. And looking at the tactics in which the strategies that Schneider Electric have used is a great way to consider, well, how can we use this person in another part of the organisation and retain their skills and abilities?
It's a really good post. I mean, LinkedIn can sometimes produce some super, I mean, obviously there's loads of crap in there as well, but sometimes they pull out some amazing stuff. And this is a really great case today. It was about 6 months old, so I was a bit late to it. But I stumbled across it and I thought, you know what? They've really unpacked this. And they've given you six examples from this case study as to how you can implement these, or at least think about implementing them. Yeah. Open talent marketplace. The idea of having a technology system which automatically matches people, take away the apply obligation. So check out that link. It's really good.
Can I say one thing briefly? If I'm remembering correctly, Schneider Electric are also a client of Video My Job, and they use video within the organization as a great way of building and maintaining that community.
That's really interesting.
Internal communications.
I wonder whether the use of video is linked to ability to move around. It's got to help, hasn't it? Like, it's got to help people understand what the job is that's available. Because otherwise, you're just confronted with like a library of job descriptions that is not like consumable. Like, why would you even think about that? So anyway, let's move on to the topic, man, because we've got some very interesting people to bring on, particularly two folks that I really admire in our space, because they, in many respects, have pioneered the idea of using video, using live streaming, and have forensically got deeper with it. So firstly, I want to bring on our good friend Louise Trance. She has been a huge event organizer. In fact, I'll let her introduce herself. She really should need no introduction, but she actually now works for Crowdcast, which is amazing. This is the platform we're using right now. So I'm super interested to know from Louise's point of view. I think she's down as a different person here. Give me a sec.
As recruiter's on.
Oh, I see.
In the chat.
Why have you done that, Louise?
Recruiter's on is the channel that me and Louise use for putting out shows on a daily basis.
All right. I don't like it.
Don't say that.
I don't. but I'm going to invite her on anyway. There she is. How are you doing, Louise?
I'm great. Thanks for having me on. Hi, Stephen.
Good afternoon. It is afternoon, yeah. Good afternoon.
Okay.
I'm
going to invite, by the way, you look glorious with that background. It's fantastic. I'm going to invite Jose
Cadillac. Fantastic. I see what you did there. Fantastic.
I want to invite Joseph Cadless on as well. He's he has done a remarkable document on how to do virtual recruiting, virtual coaching, virtual whatever. There he is. Jose, how are you doing, man?
Hi, Joseph. Hello, everybody. Hello, everybody. Hi.
Great to see you, man. Okay, so quick introductions. Luis, for people who don't know you, can you introduce yourself real quick, who you are and what it is you do?
So I'm Louise Triance from UK Recruiter. I run a community for recruitment professionals, mostly in the UK, and I do a shedload of online events.
That's cool. And you do some support for Crowdcast as well, don't you?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I work for Crowdcast too, which is which is this platform. So, perfect for web broadcasting.
Indeed. And Jose, for the few people that don't know you, can you quickly introduce yourself and what it is that you do?
Yeah, sure. I'm a co-founder and shareholder at the holding covering GoodCall, which is the recruitment business, mostly based on active sourcing. We also have in the holding Recruitment Academy, which, as you can see, I'm actually now in our training room here in Prague in the Central Europe. And one part of our holding is also DataGrid, which is ATS business. So yeah, this is what we do, recruitment from all the parts, educational, technical, and the consulting itself.
Amazing. And Jose, you've always been, I mean, I'll go to you first. You've always been a bit of a technological pioneer in our space, because I think you come from some sort of tech background of some type, and you've always had an interest in, you know, being an advanced user of technology. And the topic of today's conversation is, look, everyone's been basically used to using video tech by now, but how can we elevate them to the next level? Because we all know how to do Zoom. But what are you seeing in terms of how they can improve? Like, what are the standard errors that are you seeing you know, the average person that they make an error? How could you improve them if you could coach them up on that?
I think it has definitely more angles. As you already mentioned, I wrote a book, COVID Proof Virtual Trainer, which was like a spontaneous, right in April. I got a bunch of messages like how to do webinar with, like, for example, you mentioned Crowdcast, you are doing this, you are doing multi-streaming, but you have to invest some time like to figure out like how is it working, right? And people were struggling how to put there one remote person, one face-to-face person, and multi-stream it here, having recording in, for example, full HD and so on. So different platforms, different features and so on. But I think the main thing is that what's the purpose of those events? Yeah. I think currently, for example, Microsoft, they started in Australia a big project where they're hiring people in sales, but in huge numbers. Yeah. So how to do that? And their proof of concept is that they are creating educational content for salespeople. And from there, they're hiring the people. Yeah. So we won the tender for the Czech Republic and some other 9 countries of the Central and Eastern Europe. And we built a Microsoft Academy for business apps. It's kind of called like this. So Recruitment Academy is creating the content. It's sitting on the DataGrid platform, and GoodCall is making the placements from that. Yeah. So currently, imagine you are in the recruitment business, but it shifted over to, let's say, e-commerce business, where, of course, the video and the video education, micro-learning, on-the-job learning, whatever we call it, there are, of course, blended learning and so on, various things you can actually go.
That's super interesting. So, I mean, that's totally just basically adding some more value to the customer by, you know, creating content, video-based content to draw in the candidates that you're looking for. And then obviously also doing the delivery of the placements as well. So that's like really embedding with the customer. A smart move, man. I mean, this is what agencies need to be doing, isn't it? Like, instead of trying to just compete in shipping CVs, you need to kind of add plus value by provisioning these services to companies that don't have either the bandwidth or the imagination or the expertise to put this together. So I think video in agency world really does need to step up and improve. Louise, I speak to you on this because you basically communicate with every recruitment agency in the UK, I would say, via your network, UK Recruiter. Where are you seeing agencies, like their level in terms of video usage? Are they doing anything interesting there, would you say?
I think it's really varied. I think that one of the challenges is, you just said everyone's got Zoom earlier, but as in they've got the concept of it. But I'm not sure everyone has. I think there are still people who are struggling with the use of this technology. I think there's a few challenges here. One is that there's still quite a lot of the recruitment space which is not back to normal. So they're trying to focus on getting clients and filling jobs and making revenue. And some would say they had quite a lot of time to invest in technology and investigate it. But for lots of those businesses, a lot of their staff are furloughed, or they were just concerned about where the next bit of money was coming from. So I think that some of them use that time to invest in understanding technology better. There's quite a lot of great products out there for recruiters to use. And they could be. So I've looked at Odd Way Producer recently. Mm. I know that you can use the video technology through LinkedIn to communicate with clients and candidates. There's recruiters who are doing things on Crowdcast to engage with job seekers, to put them in front of the right clients. There's loads of ways, video my job, and there's loads of ways recruiters can use video, but it is such a mishmash of people doing a bit to engage with candidates to help them in the screening process. Some of them doing some employer branding. You know, if you just look at, I've been helping Stephen with the judging for the Noras, I don't think I saw more than a couple of sites which had video in their job descriptions. Hmm. So there's loads of different ways that recruiters, TAs and agencies could be using video, but most of them probably aren't doing it enough.
It seems that maybe it's down to the individual recruiter, isn't it? For the agency side, it's like it's not happening at the strategic level where the boss has a vision and say, and unlike Jose's sort of business, most agency bosses aren't having this drive to do this. And it's like up to the individual recruiter, who of course has operational responsibilities, to be creative with some of these tools. So maybe it needs to bubble up as well as, but we're missing a little bit of leadership at the top there from the agency. Are there any agencies that you're seeing particularly do this well? I mean, there must be a few, but maybe they're not obvious to you.
No, and I do. There's some Crowdcast users who are recruitment agencies who are using it. I mean, I did a webinar for Stickfest Group, which are an exec search recruitment business. Mm-hmm. And so they did a webinar pretty early on in lockdown to kind of showcase their expertise in that very high level market. And that was great. So you do see some really good examples of businesses who know what the messaging they want to get out is, and they know that video is the right platform for that. And then you do see some individual consultants who would probably absolutely swear by LinkedIn video messaging. I mean, I know Stephen got a message yesterday via LinkedIn video, but I've never had one. Have you ever had one, Hub?
No, no one sends me anything. I mean, it really is depressing. I send a lot out, but I get nothing back, you know. Send me stuff, people. Mm-hmm. Send me stuff. No, I'd be interested in LinkedIn videos. I've never sent a LinkedIn video. How do you do that? Stephen, have you got an idea?
Yeah, just open your LinkedIn app, go to messaging and record a video to send to someone.
It's mobile device only, right?
You can do it on your mobile device. To do it on the desktop, you would have to use another platform like Odro. But you could record anything and send it through LinkedIn. So if I made a video on YouTube and put the link into the LinkedIn Messenger, then it would come out on the other end. And of course, on Facebook, you can record natively a message on video that goes to someone. And Odro have got some great stats on the return rates when you send someone a video as opposed to sending a text message with a marketing.
I can only send a voice message on my phone here. How do I do this?
It should be built into there on the app.
Oh, hang on. Yeah, there's a camera, there's a video.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay, this is really interesting.
I have maybe one tip for you and for the attendees as well. We are maybe for 6 years, we have been using, I call it like video sourcing. So we use videos for approaching candidates, but we don't use like the mobile video. We use, for example, if you know the plugins Loom or Story Express and these kind of things. where we normally reach a response rate, for example, of around 60%, even for software development guys, which is perfect. When we are working with the companies, we are doing video job descriptions. So usually the authenticity is critical. So we usually do it like on mobile phone, no lighting, no, I would say even the microphones and so on. And sources and recruiters are outreaching with this video instead of having like a full description, bullet points, and so on.
On this note, very, very importantly, the authenticity is super important. We joked about it at the beginning of the show, actually. But if you overproduce something, people are going to distrust it because why are you polishing this? This needs to be doable by the recruiter's level.
Can I pause you there? When you talk about authenticity, it doesn't mean you're allowed to be shit. You have a responsibility to do things as best as you can. So if it's easy to do something like this, then why wouldn't you do it? If it's easy to have some branding behind you in your video, why wouldn't you do it? If it's easy to switch a light on so you can tell that you're not in the dark on your video, then of course you should do it. It just comes to standing in front of an open window. So you shouldn't ignore the quality standards, and you can record a video on the fly. You can record whilst walking down the street and it'll look absolutely fine. So
I want to say one thing on this, and this is to the audience. If you are connected with me on LinkedIn, in fact, if you're listening to me on LinkedIn, you have to be connected with me. Can you quickly send me a video message? I want you to try this because I've got the feeling you haven't done this before. I haven't done it. And I think it's probably still a very niche thing. But you basically go to your phone, you go to LinkedIn, you go to my sort of profile, and I think there's a plus button there. Press that video, and it's an asynchronous video, as I understand. So you record the video message. You're not calling me by video. You're recording a message to me, which I will watch on replay. And imagine that when you're hiring or you're trying to reach out to a candidate or a client, that's going to be a powerful thing for people to review. Because it's not just another email or not just another email. So give it a shot, folks. I'm not to say I'm going to be deluged by these messages, but I think it's a useful experiment to try. Try and give it a go. Okay, cool. Jose, you talked about Loom before. Can you quickly run through what Loom is? Some of the folks here might not know what that is.
Yeah, Loom is a plugin which is recording your desktop, but it's putting your webcam to it as well. So you probably mentioned now with the messages, video messages over LinkedIn, usually you are there alone. But the way how to increase the response rate and the engagement of the recipients is that they can actually see their own, for example, LinkedIn profile, GitHub profile, their CV, or it can be Facebook profile, Twitter profile, it can be anything like that. So when you actually create a Loom video, and then you send a link to the Loom video over LinkedIn, that's perfect because you can see the thumbnail, you can see the preview, and the recipient can actually see, okay, there is a video and I'm in the video.
Really, really, really important point, folks. The preview image is your first bit of marketing. So if you're going to send an outreach to somebody, whether you're pitching for a new customer or you're pitching to a candidate, you can use some personalization on that thumbnail. So for instance, Audra are really good at this, where they've just suggested, hey, if I'm going to send a message to Louise, I should actually just get a piece of paper and write Louise onto a piece of paper and say, Louise, it's this. Because the preview image will capture that before you ask the person to press play. In other words, don't force the click from your customer or the person you're trying to attract. If you're asking them to click, you're asking them to take a risk. So if you can communicate with the preview image, that's going to be worth money. You can imagine using that when you're hustling for customers as well. A lot of people ask me, Hung, why don't you do any BD type shows or whatever? Truth is, I don't do BD anymore, so I don't know too much about it. But I can imagine if I'm trying to get a customer as a recruitment agent, it would be smart to try and signal something on a preview image to say, I want to speak to you directly. This is not a blanket email that's gone to everyone or a blanket video that's gone to everyone. It is this. So really interesting.
So, and with for example, with the Story Express, and I think Loom can do it as well, it will create a GIF thumbnail. So when you paste it into the email, you can see this. So it's even better. Plus, of course, the great thing, because before, for example, 5 years ago, we used for this YouTube. We created a video, we put it on YouTube, sending a YouTube video. Mm-hmm. But with the Loom and with these type of plugins, you can actually see when the recipient watched the video. So you can you can firstly see that, and you can then follow up on that and saying, hey.
You know what, folks, we are in the TikTok era, aren't we? I mean, let's also think about this. We've moved so significantly into video and on mobile consumption of video. It's clearly the way forward. If it is the case that we need to, I've got a feeling basically that it's a step change era now. COVID has really shifted us away from email and telephone and into video comms. We need to get better at it. It reminds me a lot of the time. I mean, Stephen, you and I are probably old enough to remember this. Yours is way too young, maybe. But back in the day when email was the new thing, do you remember that? Yeah. I mean, I don't think anyone watching this would even compute this. But before that, it was just a phone. And sending an email was like a really unusual thing to do.
Remember, I used to be a fax machine salesman before faxes caught on.
Right. So, well, now you are aging yourself.
Back in the olden days.
But let me tell you this: the person who was great at faxing things at speed, that individual, if he didn't develop and diversify his skills, he's out of work. So for recruiters these days, we cannot rely on writing good copy on email. You've got to think about being a great video messenger, great video producer.
Can I say one thing on this topic? So there's an awful lot of snobbery and snootiness about platforms like TikTok. I would never go on that. That's for daft kids and so on. And I said that when it started, business is going to be all over this because it's brilliant. And it really is. And a lot of people who say, oh, no, they claim to be too shy to go on video. They claim to be too shy to record themselves. Get over yourself. Get a grip. Just do it. It will work.
Stephen, you mentioned something really important there, because there is I address this to everyone. Different people have different kind of self-esteem or confidence about being in front of camera. And some people are really not happy with it at all. I feel from their point of view, because I used to be feeling the same way, but obviously doing Brain Food every week, you kind of break through it. At the same time, I just think this person needs to really push through this part, because if they don't, it's going to be really damaging for them. You know, when you go and have a Zoom call and somebody doesn't switch their camera on because, you know, they're not happy with being on camera. I just think I get it. And I want to respect that you don't want to be on camera, but also understand that this is going to damage your ability to trade in the new world. Yeah. So how do we build people's confidence? Go to you with this one, Louise. Someone who's, you know, personally not confident, they know that they should do it, but how do you build the confidence?
This entirely reminds me of something that happened 15 years ago, which was when blogging wasn't really a thing and we started blogging. And every week someone would say to me, how do you write content every week? I was writing, I've written 3 blogs a week-ish for 15 years. And they'd be like, how do you do it? How do you get started? And there was all these articles about how to blog. And basically the advice was just start doing it. And that is the same with video. So when I did my first Google Hangouts back in 2013, and the amount of preparation I would do for each one, and I was so nervous about the way in which I spoke and how I looked and what my room looked like, and, you know, everything was a massive stressful deal back then. I have to say, now I've come on this show, I'm wearing a tracksuit top. Now, I haven't done my makeup properly. My hair is crazy. You just have to get used to doing it, and you have to, and Stephen might have said, get over yourself. You have to kind of jump into it. But I do understand that for many, many people, they feel incredibly anxious that they are going to blow it and they're not going to come across well. And you see it. We did, Stephen and I helped with an event 2 weekends ago for Cornwall Council. It's an environmental event they did online. They used Crowdcast, and I supported it. There was 20 speakers. There was a guy who was broadcasting from his shed, but they were all really, really nervous because these were just normal people who would normally rock up at a town hall and talk to 6 people in the same room as them. So I totally get it. But afterwards, all of them were like, do you know, that wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be.
Yep. It's going first, it's really interesting to see how we can practically support people. You're right about the blogging, by the way. I remember the first time I published anything, it was so nervous. You know, before you press publish, it was like, oh my goodness, you got to check it 155 times. But then you realize actually it's going to be fine. And someone's going to criticize you. That's rare. And if they do, it's okay. And then you get over it. But, you know, I wonder whether there are practical steps that can lead people down this
road. Let me give you a top tip, Hung. The biggest distraction, when you're in face-to-face meetings with someone, you're not sitting there with a mirror with your own face on it. You're looking at them, they're looking at you, and that's fine. When we're on this call, we're looking at a grid of four people, and one of them is me. Now, I guarantee that I'm looking at me much more than I'm looking at the rest of you. And
that's true.
Everyone else does the same, because my own face, frankly, is the biggest distraction. If I wanted to not have that as a distraction, I'd get a post-it note and I'd stick it over my own face. Often when I'm doing a show where I'm interviewing someone else, I might have handwritten notes, and I'll either drag over the Word document on screen, or I'll have the handwritten notes stuck onto the screen. So cover yourself up. If you don't want to look at your own face, because that's the thing that's most distracting, then literally do that. And it's the quickest way to get over the thing that's putting you off.
Stephen, that's really good advice. I'd be interested to see if people make that technique, because it's going to be, like I say, I think we need to give practical support. Jose, I wonder whether you've got any thoughts on this, because you've got a team of recruiters, right? You've got a bunch of people you always pipeline into your company. There's got to be some of those folks that you've noticed, okay, they're not that comfortable. What do you do as a manager to get them to be more comfortable with this channel?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, we still got even over the crisis 100 plus people, so it's still quite a lot. I would say it's similar like being on the stage. Yeah, but I think the important thing is that maybe the video is not your strength. Maybe you will be better with podcasting. Maybe you will be still better with blogging. Yeah, but of course, video. There are various types of videos. Client calls, you have to do client calls, yeah, and so on over the video. But when we are speaking about, for example, recording some courses and so on, it can be the case that, for example, video is not your thing. It can be simply maybe sometimes hard truth, but it's like that. Here at GoodCall, we normally use, for example, webinars and so on, but usually, even because I did quite a lot of them, I was doing webinars 8 years ago, maybe even before. So we are usually starting with some advice, like how even with the webinar, it has some structure, right? So focus on this, focus on that, do some greeting at the beginning, give them some time to connect to the webinar, because at the beginning, people are connecting. Not everyone is there since the minute zero, right? So then, of course, they have some guidelines. And then they just need to practice. They need to do it once, twice, and so on. And you will get used to it as you will get used to anything.
What is coming through is exactly that. You just got to do it and practice, even if it means just getting on to something like a Zoom and just seeing your face on camera and just getting on with it. I think COVID is going to help, because it's forced everyone to do a lot more of this, right? I mean, there's going to be anybody with a computer and an internet, I think, has just basically gone to do a Zoom party, or they've tried to get in touch a little bit, even older parents and stuff like this. So I'm hoping that we've crossed the Rubicon there, but there's still a long way to go, obviously. Okay, let's move on to live streaming, folks, because this is another form of video, even though I'm kind of reluctant to call it video, because it is very, very different. It is going out directly to people. We're live streaming now. There's no edit, no post-production, so on. Let's go to you first with this, Jose, because particularly you wrote about this. Can you explain sort of what are the different platforms that are useful to experiment with? How does it work? What is RMTP? You know, I have no idea. It would be good to get an overview for you there.
Yeah, you meant RTMP.
There you go.
Of course, now we have the wide selection of where we can actually do the live videos. Yeah, we have Instagram, we have Facebook, we have LinkedIn, Twitter as well. And of course, LinkedIn was probably the final one. But the thing is that when you want to take the advantage on multi-streaming, as you, for example, Hank, you want to do with your show, I'm most likely consuming this show usually over Spotify over the weekend or something like that. But now we are multi-streaming. For example, my favorite tool for this is StreamYard. StreamYard, I think, .com. For various reasons, before that, I used Restream.io, but it was a little bit buggy and so on. With the StreamYard, you can actually use also a green screen. Yeah, as you can see, we have, for example, over there, a green screen, so I can quickly do a green screen video. I can easily connect other people, yeah, which was a bit of a bummer with the Restream, where it wasn't possible in like the easy way. As you, for example, mentioned Zoom, we don't much use Zoom here at Good Call. We use Whereby, even for candidates, for candidates calls and so on. Use Whereby because it's just one link. The link can be different for the recruiters in the team, and the candidate just need to click on the link and you are there. Sometimes there might be a problem with the firewalls and so on, but with the Zoom, you know, of course, it's more complicated. Yeah,
simply. You know what? Just on that note, I'm a big fan of Whereby. We had actually Jess Hayes, who works for Whereby as head of people, on the show a couple of weeks ago. I've been using that thing really from your dot, and it's a great tool. It's basically a one click. Here's the link. Just jump in. Whereas very Zoom simple. Is clunky. You got to download software. You got to open up. It makes it. Do you open a browser or the client? It's like, come on, too much. The quickest and simplest thing is Whereby.com. They need to be more successful than they are. Okay, sorry, Jose, keep going.
So with the StreamYard, you can actually multi-stream to these various channels apart from Instagram. Instagram is one of the channels which is kind of these typical RTMP transfers. So you cannot do that. Sometimes I do that. I do StreamYard to LinkedIn, Facebook, YouTube, and I put on the mobile phone, I put a live video and I kind of point it out to my screen. So doing Instagram live like that, it's possible, of course, as well.
Yeah.
Then, of course, with for example, it's a big question with the webinars. Yeah, like a lot of webinars providers, and suddenly you need to choose which one. With one you will not be satisfied with, for example, with the recordings. With another one, it's more difficult to connect someone from the outside and so on. So I, over the past years, I tried, for example, Webinar Jam. I tried AnyMeeting. Currently, sometimes I'm using ClickMeeting, but it has some cons, let's say, as well. Where, for example, when you are as a speaker, you can finish the webinar. You are as a host as well. Like the speaker equals to the host. Yeah. So it's so currently we are for. It depends what kind of webinar we do, but we use our own solution where we actually have a separate person handling Wirecast on a separate laptop. So it's like a mini TV, I would almost say. Yeah? We can have, for example, two cameras because sometimes here in this room we do. That we have a bunch of people who are here face to face listening to the presentation like here, and plus it's a webinar as well. So we are switching cameras between the speaker and the people in the audience, and the people in the audience can ask the question, and people, of course, online can see it.
Going the next level. Going the next level, Jose. But this is part of the reason why I would love having you on the show, because you do that. Let's talk about Crowdcast a little bit, Louise, because this is the platform I'm using. And I'm using it actually because of you guys. Yeah, you and Stephen introduced me to this because I was a guest, I think, on a few shows or whatever. And it was like, okay, I think I know what to do here. Tell me about what Crowdcast is, where is it going, and how do you see the thing evolving as a product?
So, I work in a customer support role. So, you know, I guess that I'm probably not the voice of Crowdcast in terms of their future plans. But Stephen and I started using it back in 2017 because we'd been using Blab, which was a really funky tool. It was actually a little bit like this, but people could just pop in and pop out. And do you remember using that, Hank?
Blab was amazing. I really am sad that that's gone.
Tied in with Twitter.
Yeah, that was really cool.
It was fun. But what I liked about Crowdcast was that you could bring people on screen relatively easily, and you've got the chat in the sidebar, and that felt quite good fun. We just talked a bit about webinars, and the thought of joining a webinar now is so boring. I like the live element of it. And I know some webinars are live, but you just can't tell. So we know this is live. I see a comment in the chat bar. I can engage with that person. I can be chatting in the chat bar while Stephen's talking, and so that's what I like about Crowdcast, and I think that's what makes it a great platform, is that
it's live
engagement.
Yeah, it's live.
And there's engagement.
Okay, let's talk about this, folks, because we've also had 6 months worth of online events now, haven't we? We've seen the events business get crushed by COVID-19, and everyone's like dived into this do online events. What are the good things that you found? What are the bad things? What do you think is going to be persistent as we learn what is a good live, a good online event? Let's go to you with this one, Stephen, because you're about to put on Nora's, aren't you? So, you know, what have you kind of learned in the journey as both a delegate, as an organizer? You know, what is it? What are the strengths behind different types of online format?
Well, Louise touched on the point I'm interested in, which is the getting boring. Just having people on screen talking to each other is not visually stimulating enough. It needs more. And you were talking about getting people to be on camera in the first place. And yes, people need to be convinced of that. But the people who are already doing that, they need to take it up a level. They need to do more, to be more visually stimulating. In the show that we were helping support this week, Rec Expo, some of the presentations were amazing production values and looked fabulous. Wendy at Firefish was one in question. And another thing I was doing yesterday was helping to run a round table, which was on Zoom, but then RTMP'd to Vimeo live streaming, and then from there bounced to Swapcard. So the connectivity of the different platforms is now at a level where you can imagine your purpose, and you can work out the way to have the platform you want to stream to, that they want to be live on, and the platform you want that to be output on. And not only in that, in terms of stepping up your production values, there's any number of tools that you can use to make things just that a bit better. You can have multi cameras going on. You can have things going on like this, where you've got your presentation, floating on screen in front of you. You can have videos embedded in them. All of these things can be happening where you're able to be much more creative in what you do and how you do it. So the ability to step up the caliber of what you're doing and be more interesting is all there. The other thing to remember is when you're giving a presentation to someone online, you're not standing on stage talking to a room full of 100 people with a big screen behind you. You're literally looking that person in the eye, and they might be using one of these to watch you. They almost certainly have headphones on. So when you're looking at someone in the eye and you're giving them a presentation, then you can be whispering to them. You can have your microphone down, and you can be much more intimate and almost whisper to them. So you're literally inside their head. You're between their ears, and you can talk to them in an immediate way. That market, that audience of one that you just can't do in a stage environment. So the speakers who are doing well are the ones who are taking advantage of the medium, who are recognising the pluses and minuses of it and playing to it and getting their content on screen in a way that really engages people.
Do you know what I think is true? I think that it's presenting online is it's not entirely different, but it's significantly different from presenting on stage. And there's different people that are doing well that you wouldn't expect, and there's different people that are doing poorly that you would have thought would be better. And it is a very different experience. A lot of folks I know really vibe from being the audience interaction. They don't see that, and it can be very difficult. Other people are more comfortable about audience. So yeah, it's going to be fascinating. And I totally take your point as well, Stephen, about how we need to get more interesting with the presentation. So I think back in the day when you got a stage, I think you can get away with basically a PowerPoint presentation, slide by slide, flick through the pages. But these days when you're presenting online, it needs to be a more compelling. You need to have more things going on because people are distracted.
That I just showed you was a PowerPoint. The floating thing on screen, that was PowerPoint.
It was PowerPoint. It was obviously not just presented on screen in the same way. So it was a different flavor, which is what I'm trying to say.
there's a tool that I use called Manycam, and Manycam allows me to have layers upon layers upon layers. So I could have, you know, multiple things on screen. I can have my logo here. I could use NDI technology to pull in other people from a Skype call to put them on at my screen.
Let me put a caveat to all of this. I need to interrupt you, Stephen. Let me put a caveat to this simply because when you're going on to an online event, as a speaker or as a person doing that, you're often given a set of instructions by the event organizer saying it must be in this format. So you might not have the ability to play around in this way, which puts the pressure onto the organizer. How do you do this? So I will go to you with this one, Louise. Like, how do you create the format where people can firstly produce this? And, you know, you can't be an expert in everything, but they want to be able to tell a story, but you want to create an environment for them to be able to be compelling. And when you know there's all these types of challenges, how do you do that?
So that I was actually hoping to answer this question. So about 6 weeks ago, I saw an event organizer post something on LinkedIn, which said we did an online event and it was awful what they wrote. Basically, some of the presentations were shit because they were boring and they were unengaged. And they shared three tips for how to be more engaging as an event, as a speaker at an event. Well, why the hell did they not share them before their own event to their own presenters? I read it and I was so cross. Because as an event organizer, it's your responsibility, whether it's an in real life event or an online event, to help your presenters be the best they can be. So don't slag them off afterwards. Give them the tools beforehand. Yeah. And that's just common sense. So you can say to them, all you need is a webcam, but you can help them to be more engaging. You can say to them, slides don't always help you. Talk with a passion. Brad Shackleton was at the Agency Expo yesterday. He is a very powerful, engaging speaker. He was sat in a field doing his without slides. It was great. So don't tie your speakers down, your presenters down. Give them all the opportunity they have and remind them that when you're in front of a computer, pre-recording or presenting live to an audience you can't see, it's weird. You need to work harder to engage when you can't see those people. But as the organizer, tell them, give them five tips.
Can I say this? Just as a person who's done some pre-recorded presentation, I hate pre-recorded. I really do, because it's usually a 20-minute talk. I think talk length is going to go down, by the way, because we've just adopted 20 minutes from the stage. The 20 minutes talking with no interaction, literally monologuing through it. It's like, oh my goodness, this is really tough. And you can get away with it. But it really is not a natural or enjoyable thing. Totally different from being on stage. So I think that will change. I think we'll do a little bit more interaction, more fireside chats, more type of stuff that is easier on both speakers, but also more compelling for the audience, a bit more audience interaction. Brainfood Live, by the way, the initial view of this, and we might go to this next year, was that it would just be a chat and we'd bring people off the chat into the live environment and get them on, like very natural flow. It didn't work then. That was about 2 years ago when we started because no one was prepared to go come on camera then. Like everyone was like, oh my God, no. And they were checking out a thing when I said, right, you're coming on. But I think now, maybe post-COVID, we have a bit more confidence on it and people have got a webcam and maybe they're prepared to give it a shot. So, okay, listen, we're running out of time, folks. So I just wanted to do a quick round robin to finish this off. Let's give the folks who are watching this just one tip in terms of how they may improve their video game. Like, what do you see as the common mistake that people make? How do they just improve it? You're talking about whether it's production quality, whether it's their manner, whether it's whatever. How would they do this better? Stephen, let's go with you to kick us off with this.
Do not have a cheap webcam that you found in a lucky bag. For the sake of £50, £100, you won't see yourself, but everyone else will get a decent webcam and get a decent microphone. It will pay dividends, and it's investing in how you look and how you sound to everyone else. So I'm going to put a link in the chat bar there. It's a list that I've got on Amazon of the kit that I use. Some of it is more expensive than others, but you really don't need to go crazy. And I'm not one for spending money anyway. So the stuff that's in there is absolutely on the tech side of things, really handy and not always as expensive as you might think it is. And it's definitely worthwhile.
On that note, thank you, Stephen. And by the way, on that note, not to say that you know it should be fraudulent, but I think you can make a case this is a business expense. If you're working for a business and you're struggling with an old laptop webcam and that's really foggy or the lens is screwed, you can say, listen, I need 40 quid to buy a webcam. The webcam I'm using is like 40 quid. It's not much. It'll be a much better upgrade than what it is.
A lot of companies earlier in the year were sending people home and giving them a budget of £250 to go and get some kits.
Yeah, you should absolutely do that. I think you can upgrade. Okay, one thing from your side, Louise.
Prepare. So counterintuitively, I've said just do it, but actually until you can wing it, do not wing it, do prepare. So people often say to me, oh God, you do quite a lot of prep for your shows, but it's because I want them to look good. I want the person who's on stage with me to feel confident. So if you're running events online, whether it be a webinar, whether it be an interview, whatever it is, make sure you prepare, make sure the people who are on stage with you have done that too. Invest the time.
Yeah, I think so. You basically, to wing it, you've got to have the grounding, don't you? Like some into the muscle memory even before you can do it. Okay, final word to you, Jose. One thing that you see commonly a mistake that people are making, how can they improve their game on video?
If you remember the webinars, I don't know, for example, 1 year, 2 years ago, where a lot of companies, content marketing, they are pushing webinars every week, but usually it's just presentation, no people, no webcam actually, and usually connected over the phone. Yeah, so it's just the webinar for the sake of the webinar. So I think it changed where, for example, see what Stephen has there, the equipment and everything. I can, for example, recommend Yeti Blue microphone, which is, I don't know, $150, something like that. Probably you can use it for podcasting, you can use it for calls, you can use it for webinars as well. And it's for what it can do, it's quite cheap. So definitely audio over video, rather having a shitty webcam, but audio is good. Sometimes even like the Apple headset, it's just fine. Like when you are on the go, you can do that. When you are doing, for example, some events, like bigger events, a friend of mine started a company and they are doing, it's called Confer-O-Matic, Confer-O-Matic, which is for a bigger event, where it's like gaming. You have like a figure, you are moving in the space, in the venue. When you meet someone, it enables the cameras, the microphone, and you are talking to each other. Yeah,
that sounds amazing. I'd love, can you share the link to that?
Sure.
I'd love to see that you say. Yeah. That sounds fantastic.
But definitely having the higher quality audio, video, the presentation, if you have green screen perfect, you can do it in virtual reality as well. Yeah, that's of course possible. If we are speaking about the sourcing, like videos for sourcing directly, for example, I can, because now I'm covering for Social Talent, the advanced talent sourcing techniques on the Social Talent platform. So if you are interested, there is actually already a chapter on video sourcing published already there. So.
Amazing. People should check that out. Oh, by the way, final word from my side. Thank you, Jose. Thank you, Stephen and Louise. Going on to both audio and video, I think the main thing is like you've got to get your mouth as close to the damn microphone as possible. That's the biggest problem I see with video is that people are just relying on the laptop mic and they're sitting away from the laptop. And you just sound distant. So all you need to do is plug in a headset. Doesn't matter what it is. The main value of this thing is going to be this mic is close to my mouth. And it means that you've got a better sound. You don't have to spend money on it. Everyone's got one of these. But don't think you can just do it over the air because the distance, what is it, 2 feet to the laptop mic? That's too far. It's going to distort. The other person's going to think that you're miles away. It's going to be damaging to whatever you plan to do. Okay, that's it. That's it, everyone. Thank you for joining us. It's been great having everybody. I really enjoyed this show. I think there's so much we can learn from all of you three. I'd love to bring you guys back for a more in-depth version of this at some point in the future. I hope you're happy to do that. Thank you, everyone who's watching on LinkedIn, Periscope, Facebook, and Crowdcast. We'll see you next week. We are talking tech recruiting, how that has changed. In the last 6 months, we've got Manjuri Sina over at Global Head of Tech Recruiting at OLX, and Ala Pavlova, who's tech recruiter at Miro, great collaboration tool. They're going to help us talk about what they've seen in terms of tech recruiting and how it's different, how a candidate is behaving. Okay, final word to our sponsors. Thank you again to Video My Job. They are an awesome employer branding video tool. Great to use in, with Teams. Great to easily produce compelling video content. Okay, that's about it, everyone. If you like the show, by the way, follow the channel for updates. I will see you here next week, and I'll catch you later.
Adios.
Ciao.
So, yeah, I should stop everything, shouldn't I? But I won't, because, you know, this is like, like behind the scenes, you know? So as we're doing the jiggery-pokery of all of this, we'll keep going. No, but Jose, quickly, tell me about the social talent thing, because that was
so
awesome.
So we're still live.
We are, but it's okay.
I'm going to go and get my 1 o'clock call.
Yeah, you go.
Okay, see, adios.
Luis, see you later. Great to see you.
Bye, Luis.
Yeah, quickly, yeah. Jose, because I want to hear about this. You're doing the sourcing training for social talent, is that right?
Yeah, exactly. Sourcing training. So I will be, I started already. There is some plan for over the next, I think, 3 quarters of the year, I will be delivering content. So it will be something like 13, 14 hours of the content.
Amazing.
And yeah, so it's just the deal.
And obviously, you need to pay social talent to see this, don't you? You need to be part of the academy. Yeah, cool. I'm going to have to get a free entry pass from Johnny and say, okay, you know, remember your old buddy, huh? All right, listen, everyone take care. Have a good weekend. We will see you next week. Thank you, you two. We'll catch you soon, okay?
Arrivederci.
Ciao, ciao.
Adiento.